session number 30638, Mr. Peter Wayne, reel 4. Now, you said, now the main complaint, let's go through these. And the main complaint you said was communication with relatives. Now, tell me a bit about what were you complaining about?
Well,
why?
We had, at first, we had no letters that we could write. It was probably for a week or longer we were without news, and of course our relatives were also without news. We were then issued with these.
In your case, this would be with your
mother,
brother, and your mother.
Mother, Germany
no chance
without
of communication with your father, but you couldn't.
Well, there was. We actually had a cousin in Sweden, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, there was no communication. I couldn't deal with that. They wouldn't have forwarded the letters, but my mother did get a letter from me, which was on very funny sort of prisoner of war paper, but they were forwarded eventually.
But there was a perceived slowness about it.
Yes, yes.
Anything else you were complaining about? I mean, conditions in the camp?
Well, the conditions in the camp, I know that some of my Jewish colleagues, I mean, the really Jewish ones, complained about the dietary, the lack of dietary facilities.
Now, this is the thing about kosher food.
Kosher food.
So there was no kosher food provided.
Well, not initially, you see. I think that although Colonel Slatter was, I think he was quite sympathetic to our, he knew at least who we were. This changed when we went to Canada later. Colonel Slatter he did his best. But first of all, the Isle of Man is an island and has not necessarily all the facilities for kosher food. I don't know, they may have had a population of 5 or 6 Jews on that island previously. So that caused some consternation.
But not with you.
Not with me personally, but, you know, naturally, I mean, we were a community, we were very close, and we were all trying to make the best of things. But again, it was, but there was no animosity as such, you know, from the guards. They looked rather a decrepit lot to me, because they certainly were not a fighting unit.
So they were treating you... It had been worst just when you were at the time of Dunkirk then. It didn't back off again afterwards.
Yeah, yeah. Now, once we were safely on the Isle of Man, they didn't... They said, well, we got the lot here. They also had a women's camp in Port Erin, which is on the southern tip of the Isle of Man.
Now, had your mother been caught in this?
No. My mother...
Your brother was too young.
My brother was too young. And my mother was also Category C, and she was resident in Surrey at that time, and that is well away from the coast, so she was not part of the internment policy. She was perfectly all right.
Now, so what happens next?
Well, we did not stay very long. I think I will very soon have to get some aide-mémoire, which I've written down. My memory is still quite vivid, but I don't know how long we stayed at Isle of Man, but it wasn't long. We embarked again and were shipped back. No, we were not shipped back. Somehow, on the Isle of Man, there was another boat had arrived. It was a fairly large boat.
Do you know its name?
S.S. Ettrick. Ettrick. And we were segregated. And
in what way? Based on what?
Age and fitness. And I think they kept the sort of unfit people. They were left behind. But I was 20 at the time, as you know. And we did not know where that ship was going to.
What were conditions like on the ship? They can be pretty bad on a ship.
Disastrous. Disastrous. I don't know whether you ever heard, there was another, we called them the hell ships. There was a hell ship called the Dunera Star, and there are a lot of publications about it. Nothing about our Ettrick. Nobody ever sat down and wrote about it. We were 10 days on the high seas. We had a ghastly commanding officer, and we had British troops who rifled our suitcases and took, soldiers who took quite a lot of our belongings. We were warned about this, and some of us had hidden our watches and things like that. The major who was in charge of this ship was obviously not up to the job. He was so different from Colonel Slatter.
In what way was he inadequate?
Well, he didn't allow us. He didn't allow us on deck for the first 48 hours. That boat went across the Atlantic, and there wasn't a destroyer or any other boat, no protective vessels. It was just, we were alone. And the hatches were mainly down.
Now, let's concentrate on these conditions. I mean, you said it was a hell ship.
Yes.
In what way?
Well, we had hammocks, which we were right below deck. We had hammocks, which are very difficult to manipulate. And we were very, very crowded. We were given some food, and we all developed most violent diarrhea. Now, can you imagine that? Probably 80 or 100 men on one deck and suffering from this. The soldiers were not able or not willing to do anything about it. It was absolutely atrocious.
What were the heads, as they call them, the latrines, the toilets like?
Well, they were just useless.
Were you seasick as well on top of that?
Some of them were. I do remember, I seem to have withstood it quite well, even the dysentery.
Or diarrhea? Dysentery is the hard.
Yeah, dysentery.
It's the worst end of things. It doesn't go away quickly.
No. I think it was just very bad diarrhea, but some people were very, very ill. I don't think anybody died. The trouble on this boat was that the German prisoners of war were apparently treated much better because they were prisoners of war under the Geneva Convention. We understood they had better food.
Were they were segregated from you for obvious
reasons?
Yes.
I mean, we would have killed each other. We were given exercise perhaps after 3 or 4 days, once we've got out of the British zone and we're on the high seas. They let us out and for exercise for a couple of hours, but we spent most of the time below deck. Those 10 days were the longest day of my life because it was absolutely horrible. We landed on the plains of Abraham and in the St. Lawrence River in Quebec. And now becomes yet another traumatic experience. We were unloaded and were again thoroughly searched by French Canadian soldiers. Now, these, whatever they were not gentlemen. those few of us who had were foolish enough to display our watches were, of course, immediately deprived of them. And we were all together put into what must be one of the most beautiful areas of Quebec, overlooking the St. Lawrence River on the right, in front, and on the left, that lovely old Chateau Frontenac. And there we had huts. We had proper
Did this camp have a name?
Camp L. Just L. I think from Lawrence. St. Lawrence.
Now tell me about these huts. What were they like?
There were 28 of us to a hut. And we had a hut father, as we called him, and Hüttenvater, and who was in charge. Now, we were a very mixed bag of people. There were 8 Lutheran parsons among us. There was a Jewish professor who was responsible for providing the British Army with serum for inoculations against tetanus, and he had been picked up. There was Prince Frederick of Prussia, the youngest grandson of the last German emperor. There were 3 or 4 Jewish boys who had from Cambridge universities, and another dozen or so from Oxford, who were undergraduates. And I think I must have been, well, I was probably one of the younger ones there. It was as a camp. The conditions weren't too bad. We got all heartily sick of salmon, because tinned salmon. The food was ample, but the guards were vicious.
Tell me about that. Well, because were they vicious?
They were vicious because they sat in their towers, and actually, one of our internees who had a nervous breakdown and went to the wire was actually shot by them. He just screamed. I can't tell you the name. I don't remember that part, but I've got a record somewhere. However,
were these French Canadians?
Yes, Régiment de la Chaudière. I will never forget them. They were absolutely savages. They shot when we went to sleep at night. They have to guard you 24 hours a day. And when we went to sleep at about 10 o'clock after a busy day, you know, working out, we had to keep fit as well.
I'll come back to that. Keep the guard.
They used to take pot shot. Don't forget, we were on what is actually now a beautiful lawn. I've been back to Canada to see it. It was a sort of a hill, and there were rabbits. They used to shoot rabbits with machine guns, which was very disturbing to your sleep. They were just terribly uncouth, and we had no contact with them as such, because later on we had... as I say, the...
So this was very different from you'd experienced in Isle of Man.
Completely different, completely different.
They weren't pushing you about so much. You wouldn't actually have much direct contact.
No. They were outside the prison perimeter. And we were there, of course. It was July, August, September. And we set up all sorts of facilities. Some of us could even go out and work for a
wanted to ask what you did. Tell me about this. You mentioned working out, a PT, I presume you mean. Tell me about
yes,
that.
Yes.
How seriously did you take that?
Well, we of course we had nothing at all at first, but German refugees, both Jewish and non-Jewish, are good organizers, and we very soon erected a football pitch, but we did not pitch, and we did not have a football at first. But that is an interesting story. Among us, I mentioned, was Prince Frederick of Prussia. He was the youngest son of the German crown prince. And believe it or not, his aunt, the Duchess of Athlone and the Duke of Athlone, were Governor General of Canada. So he was a good contact. And we used to call him Fritzi, Prince Frederick. Nobody used the title. When the Governor General of Canada got hold of his nephew, he said, "Now look, Fritzi, you can come with us. You can stay at Government House. You will be guarded, or rather, you will not be restricted in any way, but you won't be able to move very freely." And Fritzi answered, "You know, Uncle, I am not going to go with you. I'm going to stay with these guys. He was at Cambridge as well." He said, "They shouldn't be here at all. They are Hitler's worst enemies." This was rather embarrassing. So he said, "Well, I think it was the Duchess of Athlone. They visited, anyhow, the camp." They said, "Well, is there anything you want?" He said, "Yes, we want a decent couple of footballs." No comment. He stayed with us throughout.
Did you know him? I mean, what was he like? I mean,
he was a typical German Hohenzollern, aristocratic, very pleasant.
Not a sympathiser of Hitler, then? Absolutely. Some of his family were, I believe.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
But he wasn't.
He was very much. I mean, he was Cambridge influenced already. And I must say, on Jewish holy days like Yom Kippur, he was part of what we call the Oxford-Cambridge set. They were a little bit clannish and a little bit snobbish, but I forgive them for that. But he went to the it wasn't a synagogue, but it was in the camp. One of the huts was set up for Yom Kippur, and he went and he put his kepala on and he attended the Jewish service with his friends. He refused the honorary confinement offered by his relatives, and I think one must reckon him very highly. He did have a very sad career later on. He became a farmer. He was sent back to Britain, and he married one of the Guinness girls. It was an unhappy marriage, and he actually went back to Hechingen, which was the castle belonging to the German imperial family. They still have it. And he committed suicide. I don't know, it must have been domestic problems. However,
tell me about what was it. So you got this sports school. What about the sport? Were you keen on the PT and the sports?
Yes,
we wanted
to keep fit. We had gym classes. We had, of course, we had no swimming pool, but we kept ourselves clean. We had the football in the end. We built a sort of pitch. It was a bit difficult because we were on a hill. But
and did you play football or were you just watching?
I didn't play football because I must admit I did my PT very regularly. I got myself a cushy job.
Now tell me the working part is the work. What was your cushy job then?
Well, my cushy job was I was allowed to be we were allowed to open a canteen. We were paid. Under the Geneva Convention, they treated us as prisoners of war, and we were paid $1.20 a day or something like that. And we accumulated a few dollars. And we opened the canteen, and I was, because I my accounting background, I was sort of They thought, well, you have to keep books. You know, so I did that. But we also got a mail order catalog from one of the largest mail order firms called Eaton's. And we could order anything. And we were getting a bit frustrated. So I said, look, boys, I got in this catalog an air gun with the pellets. We could set up a rifle range. And believe it or not, I ordered the air gun, and it was duly delivered, not examined. Unfortunately, it was very soon found and confiscated by one of the officers who were in the compound. But we could order nylon stockings, which the lads sent home, and I remember people were ordering cigarettes, and there was a Mars bars and things like that, which helped us. I know I was gaining weight. I was not very happy about that because I was a keen swimmer and I couldn't do that. I couldn't swim because there was no facilities. I did go on a dental parade once because I had a toothache, but it was all very strictly supervised and...
You didn't do any other work, just helping in the...
No. I did the canteen and...
So you just did the accounts of the camp. You didn't
Well,
work.
I did the canteen. You know, I did the ordering. I did the orders. That's what I order. I'm responsible for ordering that air gun. I run the thing together with another Hungarian refugee, and which was very delightful.
Now, when did you got there? We were a bit vague on this before. Around about July, was it?
Yes, it was July.
So that's when you got there?
Yes.
So you'd only been in the Isle of Man about 2 months at most?
Yes, yes.
A month or 2 months?
Yeah. Yes, less than that.
So what happens next then? So you're in the camp. Did you find boredom a problem?
Well, we had our lectures.
Tell me about the lecture program, because we... Who organized it? I mean...
Well, in my hut, the chap in charge was called Colonel Kahle, K-A-H-L-E. Don't forget, we were mixed. Later on, we were segregated into a Jewish camp and non-Jewish one. But initially, in Camp L, we were mixed.
With the prisoners? With the POWs?
No. Sorry, with the Aryans and the non-Aryans.
So
Christians and the non-Christians.
Right. Oh, but still anti-Nazi. They weren't.
They were still anti-Nazi. I tell you, the man in charge of our hat was Colonel Kahle, K-A-H-L-E. Why was he referred to as Colonel? He was an officer in the Spanish Civil War, but he was on the loyalist side. He was anti-fascist, anti-Franco. He became mayor of Cologne after the war. A very pleasant, and he was in charge. I mean, he saw that we were happy. He was a great guy, and there was no discrimination about, oh, you are Jewish and you are not, and certainly no anti-Semitism. The non-Jewish internees were, as I said, apart from these poor parsons who with their dog collars, they were arrested and they were offered to the Canadians as parachutists. Poor fellow. It was a real mess. Oh, my God.
Now, you're saying that Colonel Kahle organized... Was it him that organized the lectures?
No. Well, he was in charge of our hat. The lectures were organized by somebody called Savadi. Mr. Savadi was actually training to be a rabbi. And he arranged some very, very good musical shows, and musical compositions. I've got some of the poems he wrote. We used to have sing songs, and that is the part I was mostly interested in.
The camp concerts.
The camp concerts.
Well, tell us about that then.
Now, there was one song which he composed about our internment. You see, the only way to survive under those circumstances was to develop interests, maintain a sense of humor, and you just got to, you know, keep going. It was a very worrying time, but...
Now, tell us a bit more about these camp concerts. So what would the musical... I mean, by then...
We had musical instruments. We had three brothers who were acrobats in the circus. I don't think they were Jewish. They were fantastic. They did somersaults, you know, I've never seen such somersaults since. We had one or two historians, and one was an Austrian baron who referred to Fritzi, our German aristocrat, and addressed him as Imperial Highness, Kaiserliche Hoheit. And Fritzi himself said, oh, please, don't. It doesn't exist. It's all died in 1908. He was a bit of a show-off, an old Austrian aristocrat. They go a bit over the top. But he told some funny stories about how he served in the Austrian army, and he was quite witty. We had... I think the concert parties were then attended by some of the officers, and we then had a camp commander who was called Major Donahue, and that was, by that time it was October, and he said, if I may give you a brief resume, you all understand English? And we, the audience, said yes. You're here in custody, and if you're asking for trouble, you can have it, and plenty of it. I'm here to give you plenty of it. I have very bad reports about you. Don't try any monkey business, and don't take kindness for weakness, because if you play ball, I play ball. Anyhow, that was the sort of tone. He said, your behavior is very bad. You're all Jews here. And the answer was, half of them said yes, the other half said no. And so it went on. I don't know what you've been in your civil life, but you've got to keep clean or else you get lice. If you play ball, I play ball. We then rebaptized him Major Balls because he was using that term all the time. We're here to teach you fellows discipline. We've got nothing to do with your internment. We are only your custodians. Can you all hear me? Everybody answered no. You all want us to win this war, don't you? And we all answered yes. Well, we are going to start right here. You're going to be ordered to work. Woodwork, clothing, making clothing. Do you understand that? We all said no. Some of you have been in business. Well, we'll teach you something useful. So when you get out of here, by the end of the war, the time you've been interned will not be wasted. We all laughed, and then he just went on rambling on. A most stupid guy, but there it was. The only thing that worried us is that we were supposed to stay there for the end of the war. Don't forget, it was only 1940.